And with that, we welcome you back to Sports Talk. Here we go on a Wednesday afternoon. Thank you, Buzz Adams, for that very nice intro. We got a lot to cover on the show today. Welcome back, Alicia Barone, who joins us as well. She's sitting in on the program here in our River Oaks Properties Schoolyard Sports Studios on a Wednesday afternoon, 26th day now of April 2023. And Adrian, as we kick things off here in El Paso, our old pals are out in right now Kansas City. We've got the Foss. We've got Chris Fernandez. We've got laying down the law on location at the NFL draft.
And yeah, we're just less than, about a little more over the 24 hours before the actual draft kicks off tomorrow in Kansas City. But I can't wait, Steve. There's a lot of uncertainty with this draft. There's a lot of unknowns still. And there's a lot of clips that went circulating throughout Media Day, which was held out in Kansas City with some of the top prospects out at the draft. I'm ready for it. I can't wait for Kansas City. I'll have my mock draft tomorrow. Not that it'll matter, because this one is about as uncertain as it could get.
Oh man, I'm excited to hear what they all have to say. Let's do it. Let's bring in right now the Foss and Chris Fernandez. Gentlemen, welcome aboard, and hope that so far Kansas City has treated the two of you well.
Absolutely. Happy to be back on with you and Adrian. Wish y'all were here. I mean that. In all sincerity.
Well, first off, it sounds like we're right next to you. That is the beauty of broadcasting via the equipment and technology that the two of you brought with you over there from Austin to the Kansas City area. So even though we're not next to you right now, we feel like we're next to you in spirit. How's that?
I like it. I like it, Cappy.
it's good, but I can tell you fond memories from last year. In fact, before I got on the plane, I played our clip with Ice Cube in the back, and definitely it was a good day.
Well, yes, it was. And this is going to be a great week for the two of you covering the draft for us. I'm excited about that.
Oh, definitely. Cappy, I mean, here's the thing. Each year, you don't know what these teams are going to do. You know, it's really a part of the process that is kind of like Christmas Day, because you don't know what gift you're going to get, or the fact that you may get some coal if you're not as good as you think that you are in scouting these players.
That's true. That is very true. And the two of you have been busy, by the way. Let's give our listeners a little recap. You landed this morning in Kansas City, and the first thing you did was you went off to one of the clinics that these top draft picks had a chance to put together today.
Yes. Yes, we did. And the interesting thing is that the NFL has a list every year, and they invite a certain amount or number of prospects each year. And you're right. Chris and I were up close and personal with, I think, everyone except Will Levis.
I could not, for the life of me, find Tyree Wilson. I that's who I really wanted to get to to meet, and didn't get a chance to see him. But I'll tell you, Cappy, the energy out on the field today with these young men that are about to have their lives changed was just so high. You could see it in their faces, in the way they were talking when they were doing interviews. Just a really good morning out with these guys this morning.
That's awesome. Now, let's name drop, because that's the favorite thing we do with you clowns on the show. I love that about the two of you. You guys always name drop like champions so casually. So let's do it. We'll start with Chris. Did you see Bryce Young today?
I did get to see Bryce Young, but I'll tell you who I enjoyed seeing again that we'd seen before was we met up with CeeDee Lamb.
Ah, he was out there, nice.
He was out in support of all the guys that are looking.
He was talking Texas, though.
Yes, and he was talking to the Texans. He was talking
Texas. He was saying that the Texas, either being from Texas, playing at Texas, Texas was the
Texas
number one
was,
state
for
to have the quality football players.
Actually,
good.
I think what he said was, he said there are more Texas guys starting in the NFL than he's ever seen.
Than anywhere else. Yeah,
wow,
which is great.
That's really cool. So you saw CeeDee Lamb. That's good. Foss, how many draft pick encounters did you have face-to-face with all these prospects? Let me hear.
Okay, so I played a little game against myself. And I had gone out. I've been an avid sports card collector since I was a little fat kid in the 70s.
Oh, wow, okay.
And so I just happened to buy a couple of prospect packs. I got Bijan, I got Bryce, and I got CJ Stroud, right?
Wow, what a three-pack that is.
Right.
Yeah.
So the thing was, I bought a new Sharpie, Cappy, so we didn't have any
Sharpie issues. You know how that goes.
You know how that goes.
You know how that goes. That's right.
First, run up against Jordan Addison, who also someone else had did it a little bit better. They brought the packs to the field today and had the guys open them to see if they could get their own.
Was this the same packs that you bought?
No.
Different brands, different everything.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
And Jordan Addison, wide receiver, pulls
Bijan.
Okay, Cappy, this is because this is the Cappy rule. Always buy a fresh new Sharpie at every event you go to.
Fair
only
enough.
Only $199.
Gotcha.
So I said, hey, Jordan, I got a Sharpie. I go, come on. I said, I just talked to Bijan, and I'm wearing my Austin FC hat, just something Texas, but I wanted to do a little Austin because if I saw Bijan, I wanted him to know. It, you know, we definitely rep 600 ESPN El Paso, but I had a plan with this Austin thing on the cap.
Did you arrive in Kansas City today with Chris wearing your 600 ESPN El Paso polos?
No, because the draft night is tomorrow.
And
this is pregame.
But you're around. But you're around the picks. You're around the guys.
Listen, we're going to be around
Adrian,
tomorrow.
Hang on.
You guys got two of those polos.
You could have worn one today.
Thursday and Friday.
We're mimicking what you had us do last year.
What was that?
We wore one on the first day on Radio Row, and we wore the other one on the second day of Radio Row. We're following your lead.
No, that makes sense. We're going to get back to him. This is the prep time.
Okay.
So we go with Jordan because – the guy says, why don't you get Bijan to sign this card you just pulled out of this pack? He rolls over. He gets Bijan to sign. And then, boom, I get him signed. We see Anthony Richardson, who I said I thought was probably one of the sleeper pick quarterbacks. Doesn't look like a quarterback. Man, he's huge. But he's in great shape. He pulls a CJ Stroud. Doesn't have a Sharpie. Man on the spot with the Sharpie. I follow Anthony talk to him, get some photos with him, go over to CJ. CJ says, hey, Anthony, where's yours? He says, I don't have one. He goes, was this for you? He said, yes, so we personalized it. Then I said, CJ, I'm the one who actually gave him the Sharpie. Can I get an autograph for you? He said, oh, no problem, man. Bam. So now I'm 2 for 3. Well, everybody is around Bryce Young. I mean, they're just – you can't get a word in edgewise. But I walked from one side of the field all the way down there to the lunch box line where they were given the and he said no problem, so I got the third one.
He was persistent.
Yeah, wow. I was a little persistent.
You're on him. So the truth is this, and we can speak from experience from Radio Row at the Super Bowl. When you want something, you just go out and get it, and you're not intimidated. First off, these guys are half your age or less than that, so there's no reason to be intimidated to begin with. But when you want an autograph, and now this is another thing. Okay, had you already been credentialed at this point?
I had.
So you had you're wearing your credential from 600 ESPN El Paso. Was there anything on the credential that said if you get an autograph during the draft, you could lose your privilege?
Didn't look. And if you're a guy like you, I would advise you don't ever bring that up in public because now you've got me in the crosshairs. So if someone really wanted to cross-examine me, I'd have to take the fifth, which means I'm incriminating myself.
Well, first off, you're on the air talking all about how you walked up to players with Sharpies and how you're bragging that you always got to bring a new Sharpie.
But no one knew about the technicality that you just brought up.
Well, what do you think? Do they think you're just people, like random stalkers, or were you there for a reason because you're covering the draft?
Yeah, and I was covering the draft, had gotten good copy.
Yeah.
But again, on occasion, on rare occasion, how many times do you see somebody do a double reverse pass? Not often, right?
That's
in a football game?
That's true.
sometimes the element of surprise and the and good planning, that trick play, as they call it, or the gadget play, works. I've been a sports card collector since 1977. It was interesting that I pulled that pack. You've been with me before, you and Adrian both. I'm not an autograph seeker. Nonetheless, this was a very interesting occurrence because others were signing and in the trading card signing game. I didn't initiate it. I just got behind my blockers.
And played the game.
That's what it was, Cappy. He was playing the game.
Foss, I'm going to end Chris. I'll ask both of you guys this, since you interacted with Anthony Richardson specifically. If yes. I told you, and I told you 5 years from now, that card specifically is worth more money than any other cards that you had today, and I told you that Anthony Richardson is one of the faces of the NFL because he's a boom guy, and they got it right as far as his evaluation. Which franchise will have drafted Anthony Richardson to have put a great system around him in order for him to be that successful?
Wow. Okay. So, you know, I'm a man who hits his knees. So the first thing that popped into my head was Seattle. I don't know why, but that's where I went. That's what hit me.
Seattle, by the way, picks fifth overall from Denver. Okay, they get number five. So you're going Seattle as as your team. What about you? What about you, Chris?
Well, you know, me being the homer that I'm going to be, I'm going to say my Pittsburgh Steelers because I'm not happy with the quarterback they have right
really?
Now.
Really? Oh, man, I like Kenny Pickett.
You don't like Kenny Pickett?
I like him, but I don't like him that much.
He was good in the Sun Bowl, man. He was great.
The Sun Bowl and the NFL stage is two different venues, my friend.
I tried. Wow.
I think he's going to be absolutely fantastic.
You know what, Cappy? I hope you're right, you know, for because I am a Steeler fan, but I
he's not Mason Rudolph.
No, well, yeah, thank God. but, yeah, that's where I would land him. I would land him with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Wow.
Okay, that is a bit of a surprise. I did not expect that, but I do like to hear that from you because you're picking with your heart more than anything else. By the way, I've seen the Colts at 4 for Anthony Richardson. You know, Pittsburgh, the problem with Pittsburgh is they don't, well, I mean, they pick 17, right? I mean,
they do pick 17.
So I don't think he falls to 17.
No, he doesn't.
What do you do with Kenny Pickett? Trade him?
Backup.
Okay.
Yeah, he becomes your Charlie Batch.
Wow.
Man, you are a
Michigan State.
Yeah. Okay. He's a local boy.
Yes,
there
he is.
Absolutely. I mean, I get what you're saying, but you realize that there is 0% chance that happens. Zero.
Oh, absolutely. He literally walked out of one door and into the next door. The next door.
I actually like Kenny Pickett. And here's the eerie thing, and we were talking about this before we got on with y'all. Terry Bradshaw, and these are big shoes, but he didn't have great success with the Steelers at the beginning of his career.
He did not.
Louisiana Tech. He had to find his way. It would be interesting.
I will say this, you know, and I'm going to be fair about this. This was his first year. Mm. It was a rebuild. It is a huge rebuilding year for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he held his own. So true. You're right, Foss. We have to give him time to mature and meld with the team.
I think the guy, quarterback-wise, because Will Levis, for some reason, is just now
this
everybody's.
This is the craziest thing,
I mean,
Kathy. Listen to this.
But I'm not even going to talk about Will Levis. I think C.J. Stroud is the one that's going to fly under the radar. I think he could possibly be 2.0 of a decent – now, hear me out. Just 2.0 of a decent Ohio State quarterback.
Wow. Well, Ohio State's always had trouble putting guys in the NFL and succeeding.
It's staying. And I think Justin Fields, if they can get the offense in Chicago that matches his skill set.
I see
that. Don't make him a Peyton Manning offense when he's a Lamar Jackson offense.
By the way, guys, I want to get back to something real quick. Chris, make your point. First off, finish your point, Chris, and then I'll get to this.
No, all I was going to say was you've got to let the quarterback play his game. You can't hamstring him and try to make him into something he's not.
Got it. When people were getting autographs earlier today, Foss, and you were kind of in the autograph line, were most of those people also wearing credentials like you or no?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was a very interesting – I like the fact that you bring the packs and have them open.
Today,
it was different because you had several people with packs – trying to see if the guys would get him and put that on camera.
Oh, I got you.
Cappy,
got you.
The feel in today's event
was
night and day to the event we had in Vegas, in my opinion.
Yes.
It was a little more free.
Festive,
and
free.
Festive and a lot of energy. Yeah. It was different.
Yeah, and again, they were handing these packs out to a lot of the prospects.
Right.
I just happened to have the Sharpie. I don't know how you get the packs and don't bring the new Sharpie, but good for me, good for us.
Yeah. There you
go. I think to Adrian's point that he made earlier in the show, I think the feel of today's event was different in that this draft is really up in the air. So many changes could happen before the picks are made.
Good point. And I don't think the conventional wisdom, I won't say that, not conventional wisdom, the rationale that people think where these guys are going to go, like I said, I was laughing. I said, with the 17th pick, you know, blah, blah, picks, you know, Joe Bag of Donuts from Northwestern. And everybody's like, who's this guy?
Yeah,
Northwestern. You know what I mean? He's this offensive lineman. He's really smart. You know, he has a 4.2 GPA. He's 320 pounds, and they liked his, you know, footwork. Oh, okay. We'll take him. You know, so, yeah, it could be – there could be – I'm believing there's at least two guys in the first round that get picked that we go, he wasn't on the guest list.
Exactly. I think you're right. All right, settle in, you two. I've got questions for you when we come back. I do want to know if you guys have already been invited to parties tonight or if that hasn't happened yet.
So, what's happened.
Oh, my God. Okay, listen, save it. Save it for when we come back, all right?
No problem.
We can do that. More with the Foss, more with Chris Fernandez as Sports Talk continues there in Kansas City at the NFL Draft. Representing 600 ESPN El Paso. God bless them. We love them. They're there for us. They are there for us, and we love the fact that they're covering the draft. Let's go to Charlie One. He's back and has our first traffic update of the afternoon. It's all said and done. Guys, we're hearing that C.J. Stroud could slide. And let's just say Bryce Young goes number one to Carolina. And then what happens with the Texans at two, we don't know.
Right.
But, you know, if Houston goes after either Will Anderson or Tyree Wilson, like Chris mentioned here a few days ago, instead of a quarterback, then, you know what, Stroud might not end up with one of the teams that would be targeting quarterbacks. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, could he go to the Colts at four, the Lions at six, the Raiders at seven, or the Titans at 11? Anything's possible, right?
Oh, I think those teams would welcome C.J. Stroud. No doubt.
I agree with you. And I think that the Lions are looking at him.
The Lions need everything
they
can get.
And they do. Well, they did not have a bad season last year, and they're building, and I think that he would fit and help them progress in their
Let me say this about the Lions, guys. Jared Goff had the best season in years last season with the Lions.
Correct.
He looked better with the Lions than he did with any time recently with the Rams. I'll put it that way. But you still need a quarterback of the future, and you're picking six. So it does make sense that the Lions decided to go QB.
Oh, I think you're right. I think Jared Goff didn't feel the pressure that he had with the Rams with the Lions. You know, and I think he played as you know, Chris and I have been talking freer. You're freer about your profession and your craft.
And I think a lot of that, Steve, came from the top. I think that the coaching staff believed in him, and he felt that. And I think his play on the field throughout the season showed it.
That's a good point.
Guys, last year we saw A.J. Brown being dealt from the Tennessee Titans to the Philadelphia Eagles. That was on draft night. It was shocking news when it happened at the moment last year. This year there's a lot of wide receivers who could also be moved by tomorrow's draft. I'll give you two examples. Stephon Diggs out of Buffalo. A lot of rumors around him. DeAndre Hopkins. It seems like the Cardinals have been shopping him for months now. Do you guys see any other wide receivers or even those receivers being traded tomorrow, you know, for some compensation to go in the first round?
Well, you know, Jarrah loves to do interesting things. I think Hopkins is a guy that's produced wherever he's been. You know, I think you have a lot of good talent in the draft. I liked what I saw out of the wide receivers walking around today. One of the guys, in fact, that we got to really hang out with and talk to was a guy who I thought was all-world in high school is Rockwall Hyes, Jackson Smith, and Jeeba. And he could make a splash from the draft. But as you said, free agents, yeah, I think these guys could get traded and moved around because, again, everybody's looking for money and yep. space. And so if I can drop off Hopkins and come back, you know, with any of the wide receivers that could be on the board, from Jordan Addison, as I mentioned, who had the Bijan card, to a guy like Johnson from TCU, I think it is, and even a guy that I did the high school games of, Elijah Higgins from Stanford. You could have a serviceable to now stand out wide out at a much valued price on your team.
Good point. More as we continue here in hour number one with Steve Foster as well as Chris Fernandez. Later in the show, we'll have an opportunity to talk to a little fantasy talk with Jeff Erickson from RotoWire. That's coming up in about 40 minutes. And then UTEP volleyball head coach Ben Wallace, the beach volleyball team, will be competing in Florida tomorrow in the CUSA Championships. We'll do that as well. Stay with us, folks. NFL draft coverage continues. More from Kansas City with Chris and Steve right here on 600 ESPN El Paso.
We're here at the NFL Draft, Kansas City, Missouri. Bijan Robinson, our hometown guy, yep. Austin, Texas. Bijan, we've been advocating for you as a top 10 pick.
Man.
Even when people are saying that the running back position has been diminished, because not only can you run the ball and you can block, but you can catch the ball downfield.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, it's just a blessing to be here with y'all. It's just great to have the hometown people here. Yeah, like you said, man, I mean, you know, I think that how versatile I am and what I can do on the field, the ball, but lining up at receiver and it's becoming mismatches for other people, whether it's a DB, a safety, a linebacker, it doesn't matter. And if you have a guy that can do those kind of things on the field, then that's when your value, you know, goes up a lot more. But, you know, man, I'm excited to see where God takes me, whatever team he blessed me to be on.
I played and coached running backs through college.
Yes, sir.
What about the weight room that has allowed you to be the person that someone can say, we can take a chance in the first round from Bijan Robinson?
Yeah, I mean, well, in the weight room, I feel like that's like probably the most important thing, because you gotta keep your body as healthy as possible and as strong as possible. And for me, like I take, you know, initiative into, you know, how I want my body to look on the field, and you know where I want my weight at, because there's just so many things that play into trying to be the best player you can be. But the weight room is definitely the key piece, and one of the key pieces in your performance, and you know what you want to do for the program and what you want to do for the team. So yeah, hey, I be in there grinding and just smiling, having a good time, you know, listening to music, having fun, just because, like, you want to obviously attack the weight room the right way, especially for running back.
So you talk about an important piece. Your grandfather played a very important role in your life. Yep. Tell us about that relationship and how that's blossomed over time.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, he was a Pac-10 official for 30 years, and then a Pac-12 instant replay official for 10 years. So he's always been around the game, you know, my whole life. And just me and him just growing from when I was born to now, I mean, our relationship is just so, like, just so strong. And, you know, having him in the football world and teaching me about certain things that he's seen and experienced and different players that he, you know, seen go through the draft, it's pretty special to see, like, where I'm at and how he gets to be here with me in this whole process.
Anything he tells you about this?
He just said, just enjoy every single moment, man, and don't take nothing for granted. You know, smile through the whole process, because, you know, I'm just such a positive guy, but he is too. So it's just like, you know, you only get the moment once, and for him, you know, to enjoy it as well as me, you know, it's pretty special.
We believe you're going to be a first-round pick. We can't wait. Everybody back in Texas is excited to see what happens.
Yep.
Thanks for the time.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, guys.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you, man. Appreciate it. We're here at the NFL Draft, Kansas City, Missouri. Bijan Robinson, our hometown guy, Austin, Texas. Bijan, we've been advocating for you as a top 10 pick.
Man.
Even when people are saying that the running back position has been diminished, because not only can you run the ball and you can block, but you can catch the ball downfield.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, it's just a blessing to be here with y'all. It's just great to have the hometown people here. yeah, like you said, man, I mean, you know, I think that the how versatile I am and what I can do on the field, but line up at receiver and just becoming mismatches for other people, whether it's a DB, a safety, a linebacker, it doesn't matter. And if you have a guy that can do those kind of things on the field, then that's when your value, you know, goes up a lot more. But, you know, man, I'm excited to see where God takes me, whatever team he blessed me to be on, because I know it's going to be special wherever it's at.
I played and coached running backs through college.
Yes, sir.
What about the weight room that has allowed you to be the person that someone can say we can take a chance in the first round from Bijan Robinson?
Yeah, I mean, well, in the weight room, I feel like that's like probably the most important thing, because you gotta keep your body as healthy as possible and as strong as possible. And for me, like I take, you know, initiative into, you know, how I want my body to look on the field and, you know, where I want my weight at, because there's just so many things that play into trying to be the best player you can be. But the weight room is definitely the key piece and one of the key pieces in your performance and, you know, what you want to do for the program and what you want to do for the team. So, yeah, hey, I'd be in there grinding and just smiling, having a good time, you know, listening to music, having fun, just because, like, you want to obviously attack the weight room the right way, especially for running back.
So, you talk about an important piece. Your grandfather played a very important role in your life. Yep. Tell us about that relationship and how that's blossomed over time.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, he was a Pac-10 official for 30 years, and then a Pac-12 instant replay official for 10 years. So he's always been around the game, you know, my whole life. And just me and him just growing from when I was born to now, I mean, our relationship is just so strong. And, you know, having him in the football world and teaching me about certain things that he's seen and experienced and different players that he, you know, seen go through the draft, you know, it's pretty special to see, like, where I'm at and how he gets to be here with me in this whole process.
Anything he tells you about this?
He just said, just enjoy every single moment, man, and don't take nothing for granted. You know, smile through the whole process because, you know, I'm just such a positive guy. But he is too. So it's just like, you know, you only get the moment once. And for him, you know, to enjoy it as well as me, you know, it's pretty special.
We believe you're going to be a first-round pick. We can't wait. Everybody back in Texas is excited to see what happens.
Yep.
Thanks for the time.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, guys.
Right.
Yeah. Best of luck, guys. Yeah, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
With Adrian Broaddus, Alicia Barone, I'm Steve Kaplowitz. Steve Foster, Chris Fernandez out there in Kansas City. Be broadcasting from Radio Row tomorrow and Friday. They have found a radio station to originate from today before they head out later tonight with their host, former Major League Baseball veteran Brian McCray. And they head out to the Christian Okoye party. Nobody knows for sure what's going to happen, but Foss and Chris both have a big smile on their face as they look forward to that. By the way, guys, I guess you haven't been to Radio Row yet until tomorrow, so I'm interested to see how much media is going to be here covering the draft tomorrow night.
Well, I would say this. You know, again, Midwest location, so it's middle of the country. Midwest and having Kansas City, the defending, you know, world champions, I think it's going to bring out a lot of people.
If today's event was any indication,
right. Correct. Good point.
Radio Row will be packed.
Correct.
Oh, I would think that'd be the case. And not only that, Kansas City seems to be among the nicest cities to visit around the sports world. People love KC. The Royals ballpark is gorgeous. I've heard amazing things about Arrowhead. They do such a nice job out there.
Yeah, they do. And I think, you know, with the kind of setting that they've created in Union Station, they've found a very, I think, cool, modern venue in a Midwestern town. You know, because if you look, and Chris had mentioned this, he said, gosh, things look a little older here. And I said, yeah, they are. And it's more blue collar in that fact. However, their locations and choices are very nice. In fact, we heard the lady say, oh, we're bougie in Kansas City. And so we'll be able to daily report about how that is. I got to say, you brought us back to, you know, Ice Cube, and I watched the clip, and I don't know, Cappy, if you remember, but behind me you're going, yes, it was. you had my back, man, and it just brings out a good memories. And you know what? We saw guys that we saw grow up in Texas get selected on that first night, and a guy like Garrett Wilson take home the Offensive Rookie of the Year. How cool is that to hang out with a guy like him?
That's correct. That was a lot of fun. And you guys are right. I mean, there's something to be said about the draft. Every year you always find players that slide. How far will Jalen Carter slide, guys? Maybe to the bottom of the top 10? Will he still be a top 5 overall pick? Would Seattle grab him? What do you think happens?
I'm thinking that he sticks at around 5. I think Seattle's high on him, and they could use some help on the defensive line. So is there a possibility he slides? Yeah, but I'm pretty sure he's going to stick where he's at. That's my thought.
Well, and Chris and I discussed this about the willingness, and I think we may have discussed it with you and Adrian, the willingness to allow some things in the background not to come to the front and completely resonate to detract away from someone's opportunity.
Right.
That's a long, lengthy way it says. They give people chances who have done things.
A lot of work. Well, yeah, you know, relatively. You know,
right.
But yeah, I think that he's able to put that behind him. I think that the Seahawks stay on point and grab him at 5.
Yeah.
You could do that. Yeah. Mm.
Well, I'm interested to see what happens there. And I'm also interested to see if Seattle takes a quarterback, whether it's Richardson or Stroud. Or do they pass on QB at 5 and take one at 20 if
yes.
a guy like Hendon Hooker is still on the board?
Well, we were talking. We have a great insider that we on Laying Down the Law talked to, Bo Marchant, college2pro.com. And he's, you know, he goes to all the Senior Bowls and different things. And, you know, he said that the knee of for Hooker may be of concern, again, depending on his game. But he said that he's definitely a guy who, once healed, can certainly contribute.
Guys, want to ask you about some of the quarterbacks we could see go day 2, day 3, when it's all said and done. And a lot of El Paso ties for some of these other quarterback prospects. So I'm talking about Jake Haener from Fresno State. That's somebody who the Miners had a chance to take on when they played Fresno State in the New Mexico Bowl. Dorian Thompson-Robinson played for UCLA when he came here to the Sun Bowl as well. You have Texas's own in Clayton Toon out of Houston. Tanner McKee out of Stanford. That's somebody Sun Bowl fans also might remember. And then Max Duggan, you think of him out of TCU, maybe a late-round draft pick when it's all said and done. Quarterbacks beyond just the first day, your thoughts on those guys?
Well, you know, wouldn't you start with a guy like Stetson Bennett, even though he's had some off-the-field, I guess, you know. It's interesting how the spotlight finds you when you become a national champion. And I can talk about that in the friendly confines of Kansas City, because I was very fortunate as well not to have only 3 conference championships, but a national championship ring with the University of Nebraska in the 90s. And as soon as we hit that point, everything became magnified. You know, Stetson Bennett is a little older. I think if he can convince a team to have, you know, that type of maturity, he could do some things. I think Clayton Toon, you know, a lot of upside to him as a quarterback. I think you're right. Jake Haener, he's not going to be, we're talking Fresno State, he's not going to jump over Carr or even a guy who managed to take a team in the Baltimore Ravens to a Super Bowl championship in Trent Dilfer. But I think he's a good product out of Fresno State, the Valley, as that's the green V on their helmet. For so long, I always wondered what that V was, but it stands for the Valley in California there. But you're right, Adrian, there are some quarterbacks, because, again, I think after last year's draft and Mr. Irrelevant from Iowa State winds up being very irrelevant
yep.
Throughout the season and the playoffs, the Big 12 product there, you have to watch everybody now. It's not just a big school game. It's never been a big school game. People would want you to feel like that and think that because of the TV contracts. But the greatest wide receiver in the world comes from Mississippi Valley State. One of the greatest running backs comes from Jackson State. They are not big schools. They're historically black colleges and universities.
And, you know, guys, we talk so much about Bijan Robinson at one, but he had a teammate in Roschon Johnson who got to Texas as a quarterback, switched to a running back.
Yes.
He's a top 10 running back prospect. As we all know, running backs in the NFL, it seems like teams love to grab them in rounds 3 through 6. And
correct,
so many quality starters are taken later because they're considered the most expendable position in the league. So I look at guys like Zach Evans at Ole Miss and started originally at TCU.
Yeah.
Speaking of TCU, Kendry Miller is another one. Then you've got Zach Charbonnet at UCLA.
Yep. Yep.
You've got also Deuce Vaughn at Kansas State. I mean, there are it's another class of loaded running backs. Israel Abanaconda at Pitt, who was part of this Sun Bowl game here. So I mean,
right,
we know all about these players and what they can bring, and I'm interested to see who goes where.
They'll all get selected. You know, Deuce, we saw him at Cedar Ridge, did high school games. He was in the playoffs every year. We saw Zach Evans, Galena Park North Shore, just crushing people in high school in the 6A level. There are so many talents. Running back from Tulane, they come back and beat SC. You've got a veritable plethora of talent. It's an interesting mix, though. It's like, okay, you know, we all know cattlemen's. We're going to go out. What are we going to have? We're going to have a steak, right? We're going to have a great piece of meat. But this draft is like going to a fine dining restaurant where you could get seafood, you could get Italian, you could get a good prime rib or filet. There's such a choice on the menu. And if the teams play it right, like I think the Jets did last year, and we all agreed, you can have some people moving to the top. And that's why, you know, with the trade with Aaron Rodgers, that may be the golden ticket for them, as crazy as it sounds, even given the Buffalo Bills in the AFC East. So I think a lot to be said and shown by how these teams select their personnel moving forward.
That's true. And by the way, guys, I got to ask you, you mentioned Jordan Addison a little while ago at USC. Yeah. He's one of the top receivers in the prospects in the draft. Thoughts on Quentin Johnston and where you think he might end up going? Because here's a guy that's a big, strong, physical receiver from TCU.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, is the kind of guy that has that he can change a football game. As simple as that.
I mentioned him in the first hour. He's from Temple, Texas. So Wildcat, just up the road north, probably about 50 minutes from the greater Austin area. Temple's put out some pretty good players over time. And, you know, run 4.44 or even faster. Again, I think the 40 time is a little misnomer, because not too many times do you get to start and just run 40 yards.
Yeah.
You got to have, you know, a 5-yard, you know, cut and then go and then cut again. You know, there are go routes, don't get me wrong, but usually there's a safety sitting back there going, okay, fool, check this out, you know, and they can level you moving at 18 miles an hour. That's not a fun collision 35 yards down the field. Nonetheless, you're absolutely right. This is a big, strong receiver that's played in an offensive open TCU and conference in the Big 12. I think a lot of teams are going to improve their abilities. And I think the NFL is coming closer to parity because people are putting out better products that are just plentiful each draft year.
When it comes to the Cowboys specifically, guys, at 26 overall when they're picking, where do the Cowboys go if it's not Bijan Robinson? If they have to go tight end, do they go offensive line? Where do they go at that spot?
I'm thinking offensive line.
Yeah,
Adrian. I think that they're going to need some help there, specifically and probably in the center location, the position
tackle
center.
Too.
You're going to need some tackles.
Good tackles in this draft, you know. And with people grabbing quarterbacks, get you shore up that line again.
Yeah,
you
and
know,
Dallas has a need for some shoring up on their offensive line. They're solid on defense, but I think that's where they lack. So look for them to go for someone to strengthen up that line on the offensive side of the ball.
I can concur.
All right. Guys, we'll check back in with you in about a half an hour to end the 5 o'clock hour for us, and then you'll be off on your way and a night to remember. I can't wait for the two of you, and then we'll get a chance to check in again tomorrow on draft day. But, again, talk back in about 30 minutes. Great job, guys. Appreciate you sticking around with us for the first hour plus here on the show.
You got it. Happy to do it.
That's Steve Foster, Chris Fernandez. They're with us out there in Kansas City at the draft. In the meantime, let's go to Charlie One with traffic. We'll come back to a little fantasy next with Jeff Erickson as Sports Talk continues. Say hello to our regular fantasy spot each week. He's Jeff Erickson from rotowire.com, your one-stop shop for all fantasy sports. Jeff, welcome back. How are you today here on this Wednesday?
Doing well. How are you, Steve? Lots of sports to talk about, huh?
Tons. I watched the Aaron Rodgers intro press conference today, and I got to ask you, you know, with the team he's going to have in New York, especially with the young receiving core, the running game, the offensive line, and the defense, it seems to me like Aaron Rodgers could be a nice value in fantasy football drafts this season.
So one caveat here, you're not going to get a whole lot in rushing yards. You're not going to get a whole lot in rushing TDs. That being a feature in today's NFL puts him behind a good set of quarterbacks. I'd put him somewhere in the 10 to 15 range. I'm not sure his offensive line is an asset just yet. It was a pretty bad offensive line by the end of the year last year. And yes, I know it was racked by injury, but I want to see those guys. You know, I want to trust but verify. You know, I want to kind of see that they're actually a plus unit before we get too excited about that. But yeah, I mean, you're getting, you know, when you're going to get Breece Hall back, you've got Garrett Wilson. It is an exciting, you know, there's a lot of good, young, exciting players. There's no doubt about that.
I think they take a tackle off the board at 15, but if the top four are gone, and those are the franchise tackles, maybe the Jets throw a curve and they go for a big play receiver, because you could have the top receivers on the board at 15, and maybe they decide to give another weapon to Rodgers, and then they'll address the tackle spot in the second round.
It might be one of life's rich ironies that both the Packers and the Jets draft a receiver in the first round this year.
Could be. But the Jets have receivers right now that are able to come in and play, a mixture of young ones and veterans. The Packers need so much. And after this trade was official, everybody has pretty much declared the Packers completely dead for 2023.
I've heard that, but I mean, I don't think... Yeah, Jordan Love is a complete corpse out there. They have Aaron Jones. Excuse me. Still have A.J. Dillon. They've got, you know, a couple good young receivers. Sorry, I got a little something, excuse me, in my throat there. And I just think that, you know, we'll see how Jordan Love plays. You know, we saw so precious little of him. It's hard to make a real judgment. We saw him do some mop-up work against the Eagles in that Sunday night game where he actually looked okay. But, you know, other than that, we'll see. I mean, but they needed to find out what they have in him, too.
Oh, they absolutely right. They do. And some people have even suggested that the Packers take a quarterback at 13, and I'm thinking, no, you can't do that. Not yet. You got to give it some time and at least give Jordan Love the opportunity before you suddenly decide you need to go get another franchise QB. And plus, if he's bad, they'll be picking very high next year, and then they can get their franchise QB.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a pretty good quarterback draft class next year, too, so we'll see. This is a pretty good draft class, though. This is one that people have been pointing towards. So, I mean, I get it. I get it if they wanted to draft a quarterback and just said, okay, we've seen enough of him in practice to know that we have to cover our bases. I mean, if the value is there, the value is there. I mean, that's one thing. I think that teams make a mistake in drafts on sometimes. Sometimes that, you know, they pass on a player because they don't think they need the player, but unless you have a legit, true franchise quarterback, I think all options are on the table.
Meanwhile, if you go to the football section at rotowire.com, you can see John McKechnie's latest first-round mock draft. There's a three-round mock draft. Jim Coventry's got a players to watch column that he's talking about. You know, there's Jets Super Bowl odds after the Aaron Rodgers trade is up there. Point is, you've got a lot of draft material, a lot that's up on the website right now.
Absolutely. We got lots of different options for you. We had John on the SiriusXM show and talking about that. Yeah, he spent a lot of time on the college side of things for us as well, so he knows these players, knows what they're capable of doing, and it could be a lot of fun watching, seeing what these players end up doing.
Let's talk baseball, because there's been some interesting news today. All right, let's just go right to the big one first. Jordan Walker was optioned to Memphis. Now, we were excited for Jordan Walker when he made his Cardinals debut. We said, wow, you know, they didn't send him to AAA. They gave him an opportunity. And he really hasn't played bad with the bat. 274 batting average, two homers, 11 RBIs, couple steals. But they got a very crowded outfield. His defensive metrics in right field has not been good. And maybe that suggests that he needs to play every day right now in AAA to get better before the Cardinals trade off one of their young outfielders just to make room so Walker could play permanently every day.
Yeah, three walks, 20 strikeouts also isn't very good. Hadn't started three of the last four games. You know, what are we doing here? You know, and I think the Cardinals recognize that. If he is not going to play on a regular basis, he needs to go down to AAA. He needs to play, period. So from that standpoint, I'm not super upset with the move. Keep in mind what's going to happen with the Cardinals here. You've got Ollie Marmol, who's feuded already with Tyler O'Neill. He started to bury another young player in Jordan Walker. I mean, the Cardinals are off to a really bad start right now. It is not out of the question that, you know, the Cardinals could start to get impatient with Marmol, and we could see a change happening there. And with that, you maybe get the commitment to play Walker on a regular basis and let him play through any shortcomings he may have. They're 9-15. It's been a bad road trip. They get the Dodgers next. They really, you know, they got to get rolling here.
That's true. Let's just put it this way. The start of this season has not been very Cardinal-like, has it?
No, it hasn't. I mean, defensive mistakes, you know, pitching has been an issue. They got a good start yesterday, actually, but then Ryan Helsley blew a game. And, you know, Ryan Helsley hasn't been great. He blew a game in opening day as well. And, they've had trouble getting games to him. Giovanni Gallegos, on the other hand, has been very good. So, you know, there is an option. They have a pivot, but, you know, getting others back, like getting like Jordan Hicks rolling, that's been a problem. And I think they've been overworked a little bit in that bullpen too. Prior to last weekend, they had two quality starts, both by Jordan Montgomery. Jack Flaherty added one over the weekend then, so they're starting to get a little bit better starting work there. But Miles Michaelis has been a problem. They has not come anywhere close to the year he had last year, and they haven't got Adam Wainwright back, and Wainwright's kind of struggling on his rehab assignment.
Let's talk about a couple of young pitchers in Cleveland that are becoming pretty hot commodities. First, you've got lefty Logan Taylor Allen. And then today, Tanner Bibby had a great start, pitched terrific. Two guys that are top young arms getting an opportunity.
Yeah, and Bibby is probably the higher-rated prospect of the two, but Allen has been around for a while. Not to be confused with the other Logan Allen that was previously in their organization, and I think was once a Padre, too. He's now in the Rockies organization, so make sure you get the right Logan Allen there.
That's correct.
And they have Gavin Williams, who's on the rise as well. Unfortunately, Daniel Espino's got a bad shoulder and is going to be out for a long term. But point is, they're rich in pitching prospects, and they have a really good track record of developing pitchers. So, you know, that's something to be excited for.
Absolutely right. I'm happy you corrected me on Bibee. And he looked good today. But you're right about Logan Allen. The other Logan Allen pitched with the Chihuahuas. So we're very familiar with him. And
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. And trust me, on Bibee, I only learned yesterday how to pronounce his name from James Anderson when we had him on the show. So I was calling him Bibby before that as well.
Is there any chance that we could get pronunciation guides to the RotoWire website for some of these kids? Because I didn't even know Logan Ohapi's last name was pronounced Ohapi until I heard it in a ball game, and we've been calling him Ohap forever. So I would love pronunciation guides. Is that too much to ask for the great team at RotoWire.com, Jeff?
You know, we have to get a source for that, but Baseball Reference does provide it, so at least on Major Leaguers. So that's something to watch for there.
Okay, we'll check that out. In the meantime, more with Mr. Erickson as we continue. But first, let's get right back to Adrian. He's standing by with this bottom of the hour Sports Center update. This is the time to get into the program. Meanwhile, I saw that the Rays sent Taj Bradley down to AAA. He is someone that a lot of people were excited about, In fact, you know, we're kind of wondering after watching his three starts what to take away from this. And I guess the answer is he's somebody that seems to have some pretty good potential. The strikeout numbers were there, and you know, he only threw five innings each start, but never gave up more than three earned runs.
Yeah, I'm a little annoyed at the Rays for this. I understand it's hard to question their acumen, but you can't question their motivations for sending him down. I think it's pretty clear that he's ready for big leagues. In fact, their rationale for sending him down was he was on a six-day schedule. We need to get him used to a five-day schedule. Can't do that in the big leagues? Come on. I'm not buying that at all. The fact is they built in some buffer. So maybe they feel like they can afford a little bit of, they can afford a little flexibility there. But I feel like they're suppressing the guy's service time, and I hate to see it.
Meanwhile, I resisted pitching Josiah Gray this week because he hadn't really looked great in any of his starts. And sure enough, he pitched the greatest start of the season yesterday against the Mets. And boy, makes you feel like such a genius when he goes six innings, doesn't give up a run, and strikes out nine. And now all of a sudden is starting to make people wonder, could he be putting it together?
Yeah, I don't have much of him this year. I think I have him in one league. Where I had four or five leagues with him last year because of his strikeout potential. Now this year, of course, he's cutting down on the home runs, although he gave up three homers in his first start. So before we get too excited, just remember that downside still exists. But strikeouts have been the problem for him home runs have been the problem for him all along. And a pretty massive rate there where, I think it was like 38 home runs last year, nearly double for the amount of innings that he did the year before. So, you know, that's something he needs to experience sustained success and growth. But this was a very promising outing. Disturbing if you're the Mets, you know, coming back off this long road trip, come back and you get shut out by the Nats. This is a series they've got to win.
Speaking of the Mets, what do you make of Joey Lucchese, who came back for his first big league start in 2 years and pitched terrific?
You know, he looked good. He looked good. Health has been an issue for him in the past. I don't know if it's sustainable, especially the health part of it. You know, we'll see how deep in the games he can go on a regular basis. But, yeah, his first start was really nice. And at a time they really needed it, too, with – everybody in that rotation except for Senga having some form of injury or suspension at some point in time. It's really remarkable that the Mets are actually even doing as well as they are right now, to be honest. I mean, with all the attrition that they've suffered on the pitching side of things, it seems like that could be a disappointment at 14-10, but when you're going with your eighth and ninth starters, it's tough.
Let's talk about guys making the most of their opportunities. Jarren Duran is doing it again. Now he's 26 years old, but look what he did just yesterday against Baltimore. Three hits, including a home run, four RBIs. He's hitting .387. He's teasing fantasy owners. It's like an annual thing with Jarren Duran.
Yeah, and he's not that old either. 2-for-4 again today, too. Making harder contact than he did in the past. It was his defense that was a real problem in the past, too. You know, everybody remembers the inside-the-park home run against the Red Sox where he kind of, he lollygagged after it went past him. Could have been held to at least, a triple. It's just the optics are pretty bad on that. People make mistakes, but you got to give full effort. Maybe there's a little bit more maturity in his game this year.
Maybe so. What do you make of Sam Hilliard, who's making the most of his opportunity this time with the Braves?
Yeah, he sure is. I mean, he's in a pretty good hitting park. Of course, he was in Colorado before that. But the Rockies never seemed to give him that sustained opportunity. You know, it seemed like they were they're looking for ways not to play him. So, I'm kind of happy for him that he's getting another chance, albeit at the expense of Michael Harris's injury. When Harris comes back, we'll see how much playing time Hilliard gets. But let's face it, they're getting nothing from Marcell Ozuna. So that's one possibility there. Just shift Hilliard over to left field.
Speaking of playing time, Taylor Walls has only played once in his last four games, and here's a guy that took the fantasy world by storm about a week and a half ago. But before people start to get too crazy about the 26-year-old, super utility player, saw what he did last year, never has really hit before, and kind of makes you wonder if this is just a little bit of a smokescreen.
It's completely lightning in a bottle, and it's, you know, he needs to face lefties to kind of be able to be that productive. He's never going to get full-on playing time either, so that's the other problem with the Rays. They have so many different options, more guys probably coming up in the long term here. I really don't think, he's fine in an AL-only league. I did pick him up there in one league where I was just getting nothing from my middle infield spot, but for the most part, you know, it was a minimum bid, too. It's not someone that I'd be that eager to go and invest in.
Connor Joe, do you feel the same way about the veteran outfielder in Pittsburgh?
All it took was getting out of Coors Field for him to be productive. No, just kidding. He's, again, nice heater. There's some latent skill, but, you know, I think a lot of the Pirates are kind of riding their best streak, and I think it's a fun little story, but I don't think it'll last.
Is Texas catcher Jonah Heim this year's late bloomer?
Maybe. I think he started the blooming process last year. He had his moments where he hit for a decent amount of power. That's kind of something that he's going to have. Whether he hits for average is up for debate. The strikeout rate has been high in the past. But there is power. Hey, you're looking for something, anything from the catcher slot.
Harold Ramirez of Tampa Bay has really been putting it together this season, kind of picking up where he left off last year.
He has, and I kind of wonder if there's a little Rays magic here where, you know, he's the next Yandy Diaz, an unappreciated guy in one organization that blooms with the Rays.
Let's talk about the website, what you have going on right now at rotowire.com, especially in the baseball section. You've got a good article with Eric Halterman talking about risers and fallers and really going into the outfield category. What else do you want to profile for our listeners this week?
We got a brand new feature from Chris Crawford. He's joined us. He used to be with Roto World. Now he's with us. And he just started a new feature today called Imminent Arrivals, where he looks at prospects for this year in redraft leagues. So if you're looking for who's going to get the next call, who's someone you should be stashing for that pickup for this year, he's your guy to go check that out. 10 guys he'll list, and he'll have a little ranking, a little paragraph for each, kind of giving a progress report. So really good stuff from Chris. We're happy to have him aboard. And that's one of the many features you can find on RotoWire.
Cesar Esparza just tweeted the show, Jeff. Justin Steele, my guy off the waiver wire.
Yeah, he's been awesome. Probably the best starting pitcher for the Cubs. You know, Drew Smyly's outing last week, notwithstanding. Steele's been fantastic all season long. And it started like the end of the season last year and started and then continued it through this year. So pretty impressive run by him.
Terrific stuff as always, Jeff. Appreciate the time. We'll look forward to doing it again with you right back here next week.
You bet. Take care.
You too. Jeff Erickson, folks, from RotoWire. All right, we'll come back and rejoin the Foss and Chris Fernandez live in KC at the NFL Draft. But first, let's send it back to our news partners. It's KVIA in this update. Back here on Sports Talk as we continue 47 past the hour, along with Adrian Broaddus, Alicia Barone, I'm Steve Kaplowitz. Back to Kansas City. We say hello again to Steve Foster, Chris Fernandez, both of them getting ready for what's going to be their first night in KC. You guys looking forward to getting some great barbecue while you're there and some great steaks, since KC is known for their barbecue and their steaks?
Okay. Did you wonder why I had you play the Sir Mix-a-Lot song? In the stanza of the lyrics, it says, "In KC, we go to the Gates and Sons. Got to get grub before we run." Well, he says, "Got to get grub before we run." We actually ate at Gates this afternoon.
Oh, you did? You went right to Gates?
Right to Gates, and I'm going to tell you. Got the combination plate, and they give you a healthy amount of food. I'm probably good till tomorrow morning.
So Gates Barbecue, yes. You had the combination plate. By the way, there's a lot of choices you could have picked on the combination. Which meats did you go with?
Gates gives you what you get. The right. Mixed plate comes with ribs, brisket, ham, and fries.
Oh, so ribs, beef, ham, and fries on the mixed plate.
Nice, sticky, spicy barbecue sauce.
Oh, I gotcha. Was it tempting? Did you almost go with the four bone instead of the mixed plate?
No, when we walked in, we just said mixed plate.
And by the way, how was it, guys?
Delicious.
It's really good.
It's really good.
Better thing, we actually stumbled upon D. Smith, the executive director of the NFL Players Association.
Oh, D. Marie Smith was there?
Yes, to D and I
having lunch,
and Chris had a nice chat. So he he may come on with us here either tomorrow or Friday. I think he's around.
He's going to be around, so. And said that if he is, he would be.
So wait a minute, you guys met DeMaurice Smith at Gates Barbecue?
We did.
Yes.
Oh, very nice.
Well, I've met him before. I've known him before.
Steve. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but we reconnected, and he said, "Yeah, if y'all want me, you got me."
Was he by himself, or was he with a group of people?
No, they got all the NFL. You know, remember, this is one of their big go times.
Sure.
For the Players Association.
Yeah, and if a plate of barbecue wasn't enough, I got a nice boot shine as I walked out the door.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, got their own little shoe shine stand right there, and had a good boot shine.
That's cool. Hey, if DeMaurice Smith was by himself, right, and you guys like ran into him, would you quietly like pick up his tab so you could just tell the stories and tell people how you once bought DeMaurice Smith his lunch over at a place like Gates Barbecue in Kansas City?
Yeah.
Be a good story, right?
Yeah,
it would be.
Yeah. I like that.
Good guy, and he's always been consistent. His birthday 2 days after, so good Aquarian. Mm. So yeah, we could do that. You know, that's 48 hours away. Certainly,
there
be
you
happy
go.
To do that.
By the way, I'm excited for the two of you that you're there because it's going to be wild tomorrow and Friday. Those are really the 2 days that get crazy, right? I mean, when we were there last year on a Wednesday, it was like the calm before the storm. But Thursday and Friday were just they were off the charts.
Remember, I got to see my favorite player, Marcus Allen, among others, who were coming through signing autographs, taking photos. Part of the whole fan experience. There's always a fan experience that I think major sports events have. And we'll see what's going on at Union Station tomorrow and Friday as well.
Adrian, should we just give these two carte blanche over the next couple of days? And if they see somebody well-known during the show, just get them, put them right on, and we'll just jump right into the conversation.
I told the guys, and I'll say it again, if they run into anybody between the hours of 8 to 4 o'clock and I'm in the building, I will happily record that interview so we could play it to our audience. And if they run into people while we're live, let's do it. I say they have carte blanche.
That's right. And by the way, guys, if Adrian's not around tomorrow, Friday, and I am, I'll take care of that for you, too. We'll make sure that if you guys have anybody you run into and you want to get on the show to tape a spot, we'll be there for you.
Well, and thank you. And, you know, again, to show the realness of real-time interviewing, you know, you could hear a little bit of the wind, but that's where we were. We were out on the Central High School football field.
Don't try to, you know, apologize. Listen, we've all done interviews in the wind. And you want to know something? It all sounds the same. You hear the wind more than you hear the voices. That's just the way things are. Now, I will say, you could have invested in a microphone windshield. That is something you could have done.
I actually have a different apparatus that could have then, you know, it would have done the Texas two-step because it wouldn't have come straight from the phone. But I've figured it out.
Oh, wait a minute. That was an actual cell phone interview that you did with that conversation?
Yeah, you download voice recorder.
All right.
And go from there.
Not bad.
Here was the thing. People were ball-hawking Bijan like no tomorrow. And so I kind of just smiled and bogarted and was like, because the guy from Philadelphia took an inordinate amount of time. I'm like, damn, bro, he ain't on your team yet. I mean, I was like looking at him like, hey.
He was a good 10 minutes.
At least. And we were like, yo, you know, I asked him 3 questions, 3 minutes. You know, get through. Plus, we wanted to go find other prospects because we didn't want to be a one-hit wonder, even though we knew we were going to have, you know, it's like, come on, Eileen. You know, you can keep playing it, but Dexy's, you know, let's have a few more hits. You know what I mean?
You don't want to be a one-hit wonder like Dexy's Midnight Runners. I get you.
Yeah, you want to be more like The Fix. The Fix has a few good songs.
There you go. That's
go
right.
Go back to the 80s. You know, go back to the 80s.
Hey, man, I'm going to
see you. Or the Human League. They had a few good ones, just not one hit.
Hey, I'll be in Tucson Saturday going to watch an 80s band live.
Who's that?
I'm going to see the Psychedelic Furs.
Why can't I get? Yeah, okay. I got you.
What was that you tried singing?
He was trying to sing.
Do you know, you have no idea.
Resident in the Sun.
What is it?
Isn't it Raisin in the Sun they sing?
No, they sing a song called Love My Way and a few others from the 80s. So, yes, that's all right. You can, you know what? You can go and check them out. Go Google them after we finish the spot, and then you'll be more up to speed with them.
I remember what you, I know the song that you're talking about, but I thought they also, anyway.
All right, nice try. But, hey, I like the throwing the Fix out there. I've seen the Fix live. The Fix was great. Great live. So, that was a lot of fun.
Okay. Anyway.
All right, good job. Hey, listen, have a good time, you two. Enjoy yourself tonight. Don't get too crazy, but I'm sure you'll have a couple of good stories about palling around with Brian McCray and Christian Okoye, and then we'll check back in with you tomorrow at 4 o'clock from Radio Row.
Sounds like a plan.
Sounds good, man.
Awesome. That's, again, the Foss, Steve Foster and Chris Fernandez joining us from Kansas City. When we come back, Ben Wallace, UTEP volleyball coach, will join us live from Fort Lauderdale, where the Miners getting ready for the CUSA Beach Volleyball Championships. We'll do that next right here, Sports Talk at 600 ESPN El Paso. Last hour of the show, 30 minutes till we get you ready for Chihuahua's baseball. Nice job, by the way, at Franklin High yesterday, Adrian. I saw a picture.
Wait,
there was
what?
Somebody in the crowd that took a shot of you, wanted to know if you played hooky from work. I said, no, he spent 2 hours with us, but then he got off. So, yes, my thanks to Andy, whose daughter is on your wife's dance team. And he was there last night at Franklin for that performance.
Yeah, I'm glad. Thanks for mentioning it, Steve. I was dancing with the teachers last night, and I helped MC the event last night at Franklin High School, where my wife is the dance coach and director of the Silver Stars dance team. So it's like their drill team. And, yeah, I got to meet Andy last night, and I got to meet a couple others who listened to the show, which is great. And I always love to hear that from people.
That's terrific. So good. I'm happy you had a chance to enjoy yourself out there. Dual MC. You danced and MC'd last night?
No, did not dance. Don't dance. And okay. Just MC'd.
I got you. Well, that's all right. Hey, meanwhile, you know what this guy does? He just coaches. And he coaches volleyball, and he's doing a heck of a job. Ben Wallace, the head volleyball coach for UTEP, and also man who put together the beach volleyball team, who is in right now for Lauderdale as the number 5 seed in the CUSA Beach Volleyball Championships, which begin tomorrow. Coach, good to have you back. How are you?
Thanks, Big Dog. I'm actually joined by Daniel Fu, our associate head coach as well. We're sitting outside of an Applebee's where we're feeding our – not Applebee's, sorry, an Outback. We're feeding our team and getting ready to rest our heads and get up early and play a good UAB team in the morning.
Fantastic. Coach Fu, how are you right now?
I'm doing really good. I'm super excited, so I'm trying to calm myself down a little bit.
Gentlemen, let's talk about this this inaugural season, because this was a learning experience for everybody, because you've never played beach volleyball before. You're a 5 seed in the 6-team tournament. You get UAB as the 4 seed in the first round at 9 a.m. tomorrow. And then if you win, you get the opportunity to play again 3 hours later against FIU, who's the number 1 seed. So let's begin by talking about the opportunity. But before that, coaches, how this season has gone. Coach Wallace, Coach Fu, why don't you give me your assessment on how the inaugural volleyball season's gone for you on the beach?
Yeah, you know, I think I'll tackle that first one, because I know that, you know, in sitting down with Daniel once we got him hired, you know, we talked to the administration early on about this inaugural season, and we had a really good plan for what we wanted to do. And we not only did, what was the plan to try to be competitive quickly, but also just find a way to make sure that our student athletes were protected health-wise, because we've got a significant number of crossover players. We wanted to put a schedule together for them where they felt like we had a real plan and an idea of what it was going to look like in terms of, you know, their growth as indoor players. But more importantly, once we went to the beach side of things, that we were focused 100% on beach volleyball. And that's been a really good plan. We've been able to see it through. And here wrapping up the season, like, we just feel like we really kind of nailed it. And sometimes that doesn't go that way as a coach. Sometimes you put together a plan and you put together a schedule and you put together all these things and it just falls to pieces. And so Daniel and I have been really pleased with our schedule, our plan, how we've taken care of the athletes. And I bet if you pull all of them, the beach and the crossover players together, they would tell you that they felt really good about it too. So we're really excited about our progress. You know, it's kind of cliche sometimes to talk about at the end of the year, you feel like you're playing pretty well and really well. But our players have seen such a steep learning curve this year because they were so novice at the beach stuff. They were such a blank slate. We're really playing our best beach volleyball right now, and it's exciting because we're in one of the toughest beach conferences in America, and most of the El Paso fans don't even know that about Conference USA Beach Volleyball, but we've got three of the top 20 teams in the country that we're going to play this weekend, which is exciting, and we're really going to play well and compete well, and we're looking forward to the task at hand.
Meanwhile, Coach Fu, would you say that the competition that you faced in CUSA is about what you expected, or has the quality of talent been even better than what you anticipated going into the season?
I think I would say that the quality of competition is kind of what I expected. I've known the teams that are in Conference USA have been good for a while. I coached at UNM from 2015 to 2019, and FAU and FIU have always been right around the top 20. This year, FIU is at 12, FAU is at 15. Tulane, who just joined the conference for beach volleyball, is at 18. So I knew it was going to be a tough conference to be in. I knew it was going to be a large size. Like Coach Wallace said, it was that we have 12 athletes that are on the beach volleyball team, and of those 12 athletes, two of them actually have any beach volleyball experience, and only one of them has collegiate beach volleyball experience before this year. So we had 10 players learning how to play beach volleyball for the first time this season, and the amount of growth that they have had this season is amazing. It's crazy to see them, and it really is nice to see them playing their best volleyball right now.
Coach Wallace, what would you say has been the biggest adjustment that your regular volleyball players have had to make as they've gone ahead and transitioned to beach volleyball this season?
Oh, that's an easy one, man. I'll tell you right now, picking up my phone before I get on the trip and looking at the weather forecast, Steve, because I've never in my career ever had to worry about what it's going to be like inside of a climate-controlled arena when we go play a college volleyball game. You know what I mean? So now, before I pack my suitcase, I got to figure out if it's going to be rainy, if it's going to be windy, is it going to be sunny, what's the weather going to be like? Hot, cold, you know, and most people don't recognize that the beach volleyball season is predominantly played in January, February, March, and April. You know, so it just is now getting warm. So most of the season has been played in temperatures around the 40s. We went to Louisiana in the middle of our spring break and played a two-day tournament, four matches in 40-degree weather with 30-mile-an-hour winds, and it was pouring down rain the entire time. So that's the biggest adjustment for them, is having to deal with the elements. Today on the beach, we were working on the headwind that we're going to play in tomorrow, just because they've never really had to sort through all that. So the winds in El Paso swirl. You know, they don't blow consistently. So from one day to the next, they're different, and they're at different gusts, and they also have these big, giant gusts. So that's the biggest difference. And just the size of the court is a bit of adjustment for them. It's smaller. It's smaller for a reason, to make the game harder with two people out there. And so those two things, they've really adapted well. But it was a big adjustment for players like Serena Patterson, who's played her whole life inside, to have to go out and have to deal with, you know, a ball being potentially 2 to 3 pounds heavier when it gets wet, and a 30-mile-an-hour wind that you're hitting it into. So a lot of that's been tough for them to deal with, but they're doing great, man. They're really starting to figure out how to do it, and they're really enjoying the process.
See, here I was thinking the hardest transition would be playing barefoot on sand and having to try.
Not even a problem. I don't know that I've even heard that this year, that's been a problem whatsoever. But there's so many intangible things out there that happen that you're just not ready for as an indoor volleyball player, or just the lay sport person that doesn't understand, like when it's one person standing next to you, you know, in the indoor volleyball, Steve, if something goes bad or somebody gets an injury, you can sub them out and sub somebody in. You can't do that out here. You either sink or swim. If you're struggling, you're out there on the struggle bus until you get off of it. If you bust an ankle, you forfeit. So there's a lot of things that have been helpful for us as a volleyball program that our players are going to take to the indoor side in the fall and really benefit from the tough things and the difficult stuff that they've had to learn this semester.
Coaches, who's really shined for you this season on the court that you've seen come a long way from the start of the season till now?
Maddie Hill is one of the players that has had the most success for us. She has 7 wins for us. she's really shining. When I took the job, that was one of the players that Coach Wallace told me right from the start. It was like, you're going to love Maddie. She's going to come out to the beach and be a star for you. And if she really has, she shined for us. She's been playing in our fives and fours position. She's a player that we're looking to get a point right off the bat tomorrow. Serena Patterson also, when she came out, she was a little hesitant about coming out and playing in the sand, but she's really grown and blossomed. I really could go through the list, but Sarah Pustakia has done a really great job of adapting and being physical and being in the ones or twos position. So she's handling a brunt of the load, playing the best competition that we see. There's a lot of shining stars.
I want to mention Maddie Hill for a second, Coach, because she came from El Dorado. And, you know, you look at your inaugural roster, you've got a couple of beach volleyball players from El Paso. Mia Bella yep. Ruiz from Americas via Sol Ross is also on the roster. Paulina Acuna from Franklin is on this roster. And then Savannah Marenko from Burgess is on the roster. So I like the El Paso flavor, Coach Wallace, yep. that you put together.
Yeah, you know, it's been really exciting to see their progress because, you know, initially, you know, just being an indoor guy, and, you know, I grew up playing in the sand, and that's kind of where I learned how to play volleyball. But when you start getting into the nuts and bolts of actually coaching beach volleyball, it's extremely different than coaching indoor. I mean, there's a lot about it that you have to teach and coach a little differently because it's just a different game. And so my initial thoughts were that players like Paulina, that I watched play indoor at Franklin for 4 years, and I felt like she was a really good indoor player, but I felt like would translate marvelously to the beach side. Players like Mia Bella Ruiz, who's a good indoor player, but I thought she would translate well. Savannah Marenko, once again, good indoor player. All these really good El Paso indoor players that are a little undersized and really can't make a giant impact for us on the indoor side. Now we're seeing there's a little bit of a recipe in the world that we live in El Paso where we've got really good indoor volleyball players that may not be giants, but they're going to translate really well to the beach side. And so that's the word we want to get out. Mm-hmm. That's what we're showing by the players that are having a lot of success on our roster. You know, Maddie Hill didn't have a single offer coming out of high school to play volleyball anywhere other than some junior college offers that I had for her. And she just didn't, you know, she just didn't get the opportunities that she felt like she needed. And so now she's shining for us, and I think that's going to really help her pay off for her on the indoor side too, because she's playing on both teams and she's really showing what you know. If you have the makeup of a grinding, really tough, smaller athlete that can do all the skills well, but you got a big arm, you can score a lot of points for us on the beach side, which is really cool.
Coach, this is only the second year of beach volleyball for Conference USA, Florida International, Florida Atlantic, UAB. Those are the teams that were there last year. And then you have Jacksonville State, Tulane, and then the Miners also joining this year as first year members. What's it like having a team from the American Athletic like Tulane? And can we ever anticipate any indoor matchups between you all, maybe a non-conference play in the future?
That's funny, man. Well, it's interesting you ask that because we're going to play at Tulane fourth weekend in the fall. So we're going to travel out to New Orleans to play Tulane fourth weekend. We'll play Tulane, Clemson, and Houston Christian, who used to be Houston Baptist, but they finished second in the Southland. So we've already got a return for them. They're going to come and play us at our home in 2024. So we're already setting up stuff like that. We want to play the best Power Five and mid-major conference teams we possibly can. We've already got four Power Five teams on our schedule for the fall for indoor, which is awesome. So it's exciting. I mean, I think there's in the beach world getting teams like Tulane and Tarleton's already an affiliate member for next year. There's some real talk about TCU coming over to Conference USA. I think that might be a done deal, but I'm not sure if it's completely done yet. So I mean, that's really exciting for our beach conference. It's only going to get stronger, and it's already one of the toughest in America right now, which is really cool.
Meanwhile, I know you've got players from the regular team that's playing on the beach team, but you also have players that you brought in exclusively for the beach volleyball team. Any chance after the fact you try to talk them into crossing over to your main roster?
You know, that's interesting you ask. We can't do that if they're beach scholarship players. If they get any kind of scholarship money whatsoever as a beach player, they're unable to cross over and play indoor volleyball.
Huh.
It's sort of like the same rules for if, let's say, a football player decided to go run track and track and field. If they had any kind of football scholarship on the for college football, they could not be a track and field scholarship athlete. But if you flipped it and did a reverse, if they were a scholarship track athlete, they could never go play football. So it's just the way that the tier system's set up in college athletics. But that's why the crossover piece of our program was such a really important part of hiring someone like Daniel that understands, you know, that how you have to balance that, how you have to keep your players healthy but also happy so that they want to be able to do both, because it does give us a significant advantage right now to have players like Emma Uskokovic and, Sarah Pusakia and Mariano Valle, who's doing really, really well, be able to cross over and get the most out of them. So it's something that, once again, it's a lot of people don't understand. Like, if you're a beach volleyball player and you get any kind of scholarship money, you can't play it in the indoor side. But if you're an indoor player that's on scholarship, you can go and play the beach if you want to. It's just the way that that it's set up from the NCAA.
So you can't even go indoor if you don't stay on scholarship. What if you basically use your beach scholarship and you're like a walk-on and you don't use scholarship money on the indoor side?
Yeah, then you can play both. If you're a walk-on player for the beach, then you can play both. It just has everything to do with, you know, the equivalency money and making sure that teams like the best powerful teams in the country aren't just stacking rosters.
Makes sense.
You know what it comes from, Steve, is that it's an old UConn and Tennessee Vols rule. When women's basketball got really big in the early 80s, they were stacking rosters of basketball teams by placing scholarship athletes on the volleyball team, because volleyball wasn't a really big sport back then. So a lot of the old really powerful women's basketball teams were stacking volleyball rosters and using them as their 16th, 17th, 18th players, and they made rules against stuff like that so we could keep the opportunities for female athletes and other teams and the balance and the parity the way that it should be.
Gotcha. All right, guys, listen, enjoy the trip out there. Let's hope that Miners can surprise some people, and who knows, maybe they win the whole thing. That would be a terrific story to end this first year. But, again, appreciate you guys giving us some time and really telling us about the progress of beach volleyball here in Season 1.
Yeah, we're excited about it, man. We're still working right now with our administration on where we're going to build our courts, and we're looking forward to getting that word out in the city of El Paso. More than anything, we're going to live stream it. We'll kind of blast it all over social media tomorrow so that people can watch us play. It's a really good conference, and we're looking forward to the competition, and we're excited to play UAB in the morning. And we will talk soon, Big Dog, so hope all is well in the Sun City, and thanks for having us on.
See you guys soon. Take care of yourselves, and thanks for the time once again.
Thank you very much.
Coach Fu, Coach Wallace here on Sports Talk. When we come back, Tim Haggerty from the ballpark right after Charlie 1 and this final traffic update.